Good morning, how are you? Good morning, how are you? Are you guys awake this morning? Wow. The crowd is, the electricity in this room is just contagious. It's just, wow, incredible. I'm so glad you're here this morning. My name's Mike, and we're Genesis Church. If you're visiting, we're really glad you're hanging out with us today. Thank you for letting me go on vacation. My family and I went to Washington, D.C., and if we weren't here the last 2 weeks, big thanks to Brian and Jim Breeden for pinch hitting while I gone. 2 weeks ago, just a little bit, well, right about this time, we were having our welcome to Washington, D.C. moment. We went to Washington, D.C. as a family, and we got there Saturday evening, or got to the suburbs, and so we decided we were going to get up and go to church. We went to a really cool church, but our trip there was our welcome to D.C. moment. We hopped on the Metro, which is their public transit trains, and we had about a 45-minute ride to the heart of downtown from where we stayed, and so we hopped on the Metro. We got about three stops away from where the church that we were going to was. It was actually, we went to a church that met in movie theaters in the Union Station, which is kind of like our Union Station here in St. Louis. And so our game plan was just to take the train all the way to Union Station, hop off, and just walk a few steps and go to church. But we got three stops away, and the train stopped, and the doors opened, and then it didn't go for a minute, and it didn't go for a minute. And then the guy gone, the driver got on the intercom and said, "Get off the plane. This is an emergency situation." Which is a little scary if this is the first time we've ever been on one of those trains. And so we got off the train, and everybody's like exiting fast. We're thinking, what is going on? Is this a terrorist thing? Is something going on? What's going through our mind? Everybody's just standing around. Nobody knows what to do. And then they come on the public address system. And I'm not making this up. This is really what happened, okay? They came on the public address system, and they said, "I am on the next train on the way." And I looked around. I said, "What did they say?" And my wife, Heidi, said, "I don't know." And Andy said, "I don't know." And a few minutes later, and all these people are looking around. It was impossible to understand what they were saying. Finally, this it was so sweet. This little Oriental lady, she's about this tall, stood there and said, "Next train, 5 minutes." I said, "Really? Is that what? Next train, 5 minutes." And she would not look at it. She just stood there looking straight ahead, just like this. Okay, well then somebody else said, "No, there's a problem." And finally we heard there's actually a fire on the tracks at the next station. So we literally had to leave the station and walk 15 blocks to get to church that morning. We missed, they have three services. We were going to go to the first one. We missed the first one. We were about to pass out. We were so tired. We passed probably 40 or 50 people sleeping on the streets, you know, downtown Washington, D.C., homeless people. One lady kind of went weirdo on us and kind of freaked us out as she was like, you know, she was asking for money, and Heidi gave her a Nutri-Grain bar, and she's like, "No, this is for the baby," and kind of went weirdo on us, and we were like, okay, this is interesting. That was our welcome to Washington, D.C., and that's how we got to church 2 weeks ago. So I didn't feel sorry for all you guys 2 weeks ago who had to get up a little early and come unload stuff, because we actually had it worse that day, believe it or not. But we had a great time, and we appreciate you letting us go. I'm telling that story just because I don't know, I can. It has nothing to do with the service. Gardening. You see that our new series we're titling Gardening for Dummies, which is the type of book I need to read, because some people have a green thumb. Mine's like orange is purple. I've never been good with plants. I'm good at killing them. I'm not good at growing them, which is really weird. I grew up in a home. My dad was like the ultimate gardener. I mean, this was his life for a long time. There was a vacant lot across the street that was owned by a hardware store. And my dad made an arrangement with them that he would take care of this vacant lot that they owned if they would allow him to grow a garden. And he turned into like this farmer. I mean, it wasn't like this few rows of garden. He turned this whole acre and a half lot into his playground garden. It was huge. He planted everything. He had zucchini, he had peas, he had asparagus. Why would anybody grow asparagus? He had a, you know, a couple rows of corn, and it became a haven for squirrels. And so my dad became, you know, if you've ever seen Caddyshack with the gopher, my dad was just like that with the squirrels. He was going crazy trying to figure out how to get the squirrels out of the garden because they'd eat it. He had like 42 tomato plants. He provided tomatoes for all of Brentwood. I mean, everybody, nobody else grew a garden. They just knew they'd come to the Hubbard house and get tomatoes. He had tomatoes everywhere. But the squirrels kept getting them, and it would drive him crazy. And he went and bought traps. He had pellet guns, and then people would get all, oh, the poor squirrels. And, you know, so he couldn't do that. So he would buy traps, and he started, like, taking, he'd trap a squirrel, and he'd take it, like, 4 or 5 miles away. And then he just knew that these squirrels were coming back to haunt him, okay? And so it was like this whole crazy psycho thing in my house, this garden, but it was huge. My dad actually, this is how crazy he got with the squirrels. He caught one, and he swore that they were sneaking back. So he caught one, and he cut off the tail. And he took it to Forest Park, which is 14 miles from my home. And 5 days later, I'm not making this up, that squirrel was in our front yard again. They knew my dad. They were out to get him. Anyway, but he had this huge garden. And I kept looking at it going, you know, if that thing would grow stuff like, you know, Butterfinger candy bars, I would be into that. But zucchini and asparagus. And what was nuts about it is that as I'm growing up, then my mom is making me eat this stuff, which really didn't turn me on to gardening a whole lot. I, you know, didn't really want to. But my dad, he was known all throughout the neighborhood for this garden. The worst day of his life is when they sold that lot. And somebody decided they were going to build a house there, and he kind of lost the place for this huge garden. But I grew up in a house where my dad, you know, he's just kind of that way. He's into this stuff. My dad, you know, if you hang out with him and you're in the woods, he'll point out, well, that's a brown squash oak tree. You know, whatever it is, I'm making things up because I don't know and don't care really. But my dad knows all this stuff. He's got an unbelievable green thumb. He loves plants. He loves growing. He loves this kind of stuff. Well, then I got married, and I married a farm girl. I mean, I thought my dad was serious about this stuff. Her family, it's like not an acre, it's 1,000, 1,500 acres of let's grow vegetables, which is even worse. But my wife is more of a flower gardener. She really likes the beauty of the garden. She really likes to work the ground and grow stuff. We spent all spring, many of you know this, building a wall in our front yard that is designed to hold a flower garden. And so I went from, you know, vegetable garden, a flower garden. I still am not the greatest planter and the greatest with this sort of stuff, but it kind of just stays around me. But we started thinking about how can we talk about this subject that we're going to be talking about. And we kind of figured the analogy, the idea of a garden is a good place to look because I do know this about gardening. That first of all, any good garden takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of time. You have to really dedicate yourself. You have to work hard to plant the right things. And, you know, we kind of figured out that if you plant, you know, certain type of flower, you don't get a different type of flower. If I plant a certain type of flower, I get weeds, but that's a whole different thing. But if you plant, you know, corn, you're not going to get broccoli. And so you have to put the right thing in the ground and really work it. And it takes a lot of diligence and a lot of work to have a successful garden. But when the day's over, I can do all the work I can, but I can't make the garden grow. And it's a great picture of what we're going to be talking about as we talk about the spiritual disciplines. If you're like most people that I've been around who are followers of Jesus, maybe this is your experience. That at one point in time, you gave your life to Christ. You trusted Jesus. You prayed and invited him to be the king of your life, the savior of your life. You asked him to forgive you of your sin. You asked him to change you from the inside out. And you had a great experience where you really knew the presence of God was with you. You were touched by God. And it was so real to you. But then life happened after that. And you began to kind of deal with this issue, and something over here came up that was just brutal and hard for you, and you kind of weren't sure where the presence of God was in your life at that point in time. And then you got a job, or you got involved with some friends, and it's just life was crazy and busy. And you have found that that presence of Christ that was there when you met him just doesn't seem to have the same power and purpose and joy and peace that it had at one point in time. And in the midst of that, you also realize that the things that help you grow in the Christian life, you just don't really have integrated in your life like maybe you should, or maybe you like to, or maybe you'd hope to. And you begin to even try to think about it. And kind of where what I hope will happen in this series is that all of us, me included, will be challenged to take another look at the garden that is our life and the opportunity for me to partner with God in the growth that is my life. And that as I do that, I will begin to look at some of the attitudes and the disciplines that are part of who I am. And maybe some things I'll integrate in my life that aren't there right there now, so that the end result will be something beautiful and glorious, maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years out. We live in a culture that wants everything microwaved. We want to live in a culture where I pull up at a drive-thru window and order, you know, a mega-sized spiritual life and a giant order of fries to go with that, right? I mean, and then I pull up to the window and it's done. And when my life doesn't reflect the fact that I don't have any depth, I don't have any real sense of purpose, I don't have any real sense of meaning, I'm kind of struggling in this thing. We want a quick fix. And I want to tell you that it's not, it's really more like a garden, where as I begin to plant some things into my life and I begin to sow some seeds and I begin to work really hard at tilling the ground, the presence of those things in my life will lead to down the road growth that will be very visible and very real. But sometimes, just like anything in life, it takes a little bit of dedication, a little bit of work on the front end. Now, some of you are probably already going, I'm not really interested in that. Which would really be sad, because what we are talking about is the thing of greatest value in this universe. And that is your Creator, who loves you, who came and became a man and dwelled on this earth and gave a great price for you. And his grace is sufficient and is good and is wonderful and is glorious. But to be in the path of his mercy and to experience his presence in our lives, especially as we move from that point of where we got saved, where we met Jesus, is a process of becoming more like Jesus, that I cooperate with him to make that happen. In fact, just hear this. The goal, if you are a Christ follower, if you've given your life to Jesus and you've trusted him, the goal of your life is very simple. It is this: to become a little more like Jesus today than I was yesterday, and to become a little more like Jesus tomorrow than I am today. That's the goal of your life. It is a lifelong process of being so close to Jesus and growing closer to him and being connected to him that I become a little more like him every step of the way. And that every day there's something in my life where he adjusts, he changes, he challenges me. And in some way today, I am more like him than I was yesterday. And tomorrow, I'll be a little more like him than I was am today. Now realize that as that happens, that is the goal. The experience of the Christian life is very much like this most times, where hopefully we're growing, but it's not just this nice steady line of growth. It's kind of up and down and all over the place. And there's times where life is very difficult, and I'm in unbelievable darkness, and I don't have any answers to the great questions I have. There's other times where things may be going great in my life, but I get very prideful, and I kind of get to a point where I can live life on my own. I don't really need that, so I get disconnected to it. There's other times where maybe God speaks in a very clear way in my life, and all of a sudden I have times of great growth. But in the midst of all that, the challenge that I have to you from the garden is this: that there are some things that really need to be in our lives if we are going to follow that path of becoming more like Jesus. And there are things that take some discipline. There are things that take some work. Now, let me make this clear again. all of salvation is God's work. I can read the Bible, pray, come to church, do community group, all this sort of stuff, and I may never experience anything. I cannot make myself grow. But what I can do is put myself in a position where God will use the things of my life to bring growth in my life. Just like I can't make any of these plants grow, but I can do the things that I can do where I partner with God to see it happen. But those things are hard and sometimes take time and sometimes take commitment and sometimes takes me literally rearranging my life to come back to the understanding that the greatest thing on earth is knowing Jesus intimately, deeply, lovingly, in a great way, knowing the Creator who loves me more than I can ever imagine. And so as you hear us talk about disciplines, you always need to understand the end in mind is knowing Jesus. Paul says, more than anything, I want to know him. In Psalm chapter 42, verse 7, it says, deep calls to deep. At the roar of your waterfalls, all your breakers and your waves have gone over me. And what the author of this psalm is really saying is there is a depth. There is a depth to knowing God. And from that depth, God is calling me. And as long as I stay out here in the shallows, ankle-deep water of Christian faith, which is where I think most people live their lives, most Christ followers, most people who have given their lives to Jesus are up to their ankles in grace, and they wonder why they don't experience the depth of God. And there is a call from God to come to the deep things with him. And you need to hear me. You can hear about the deep things here on Sunday morning, but you will never experience the deep things here on Sunday morning unless you are out beyond ankle deep the rest of the week and the rest of your life. That's the garden. That's what we're going to be talking about. We're going to be talking about some of these disciplines, some of the things that you and I should integrate into our lives so that we can become more like Jesus and so that we can connect to him and grow deeper with him and become more intimate and more involved with him and know him better. That's the goal. Just like if I plant a garden, if I start putting seeds in the ground, I need to have some image of where I'm going with this or the garden's not going to make sense. If I plant a tomato plant right next to a flower, right next to a cactus, it's bizarre and has no purpose or meaning. But if I have an understanding where it's going, all of a sudden there's joy in putting the garden together, especially for some of you who are really into this stuff. There's joy in knowing if I do the work here, this is what I'll see down the road. There was a lot of joy in my dad tilling the ground and working very hard because he knew come mid-July he was going to get tomatoes. If he was expecting, well, I went out and worked for 45 minutes, I need the tomato now. In the middle of March, it wouldn't have been a successful thing for him. And so these disciplines are like this. The spiritual disciplines are our path to a relationship, to depth with God. They are our way to get in, right into the path of where God is. There's a story about an African tribe who had missionaries go and share Christ with them, and many of them gave their lives to Jesus, and they became very passionate about knowing God. And this was kind of a little village where there were a few huts, not a lot of place to have privacy. And so one of the things that began to happen is these people began to find their own personal private place where they would go hang out and be alone with God and pray and get into the Bible and just be silent and connected to their Creator. And so literally as they started doing this, every person had their own way. And the walking back and forth of that way, they would begin to wear pads where literally a person would have their path to their place with God. And, you know, it would go out through the jungle or through the forest, whatever was there. And each, you know, person had their own little path. And it became so marked that literally you could begin to see in their path if the person was missing their walk with Jesus, their time with God. And it became, they literally developed a word in their language that meant this: grass grows on your path. Which means I can see from your path that you're not going and spending time alone with God. Here's my question for you this morning. Is grass growing on your path? Or do you have a real active relationship that involves some of these things that we're going to discuss, and like Bible reading and like prayer and like being challenged by being intimate with God, and even by doing things like witness and community and things like that. Are those things in your life, or is grass growing on your path? How is your garden? Is it growing? Are you using the things that God has given you? Are you challenged? I want to show you some scriptures this morning that kind of deal with this very idea. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 through 10. If you don't have a Bible, take at the end of your row, there's one for you. We'd love for you to take one of these Bibles and read along. I'm actually going to be looking at three scriptures very quick to kind of show you from the Bible what I'm talking about. To deal with growth, deal with these sort of things. Galatians chapter 6, verses 7 through 10. And that Bible is on page 835. Listen to these words. Paul's writing, and he says this. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever one sows, that will he also reap. That is an eternal law. Whatever I put in the ground, that's what's coming up. Verse 8, the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Now listen, most people read this and they say, all right, so what I need to do, if I sow to the flesh, that means if I'm like out partying and I'm sinning, I'm like, whoa, dude, or I'm just doing all the evil things that we as Christians like to make our little lists, and we can check, I don't do that, I don't do that, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't chew, I don't date girls who do, I don't, you know, do all this nasty stuff, so I'm okay, I'm, you know, not sowing to my flesh. But that's not really what he's talking about. Sowing to the flesh for Paul is the part of me that is myself. It is even good stuff done in my name. I can sow to the flesh when I show up on Sunday morning and just go through the ritual of doing church. I can sow to the flesh when I pick up my Bible and read it, but I don't find Jesus in the midst of it. I can sow to my flesh doing good things if in doing them I think somehow I'm making myself better and I'm a good person because I do them. In fact, that is what the entire book of Galatians is about. It's about a group of people who did church, but while they did it, they made a list of rules and they could tell everybody, I keep the rules. So don't read this and say, oh, well, I didn't go out last night and party, and I didn't go out last night and just be crazy, or I didn't go do this. Or there's so much more to this than just those things, the sin that we like to point out. This also refers to good stuff I do, but it's not about Jesus, and it's not about being focused on him and close to him, and it's not about grace. He says, the one who sows to the flesh will from the flesh reap corruption, but the one who sows to the Spirit, meaning that I am growing in my walk with Jesus, I am trusting him, I'm moving towards him, he is my life, will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Look at this, verse 9. And let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. So then, as we have opportunity, let us do good to everyone, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. It's a law. What you reap, you will sow. All right, Hosea chapter 10, page 641 in our Bibles. Hosea chapter 10, look at these verses, verses 12 to 13. Hosea says this, sow for yourselves righteousness, reap steadfast love. Break up fallow ground, for it is the time to seek the Lord, that it may come and rain righteousness upon you. You have plowed iniquity, you've reaped injustice, you've eaten the fruit of lies because you have trusted in your own way and in the multitude of your warriors. He says, listen, once again, what you sow, that's what you get. You have a garden, that garden is your life, and whatever you plant in that garden, that's what's going to come up. If you plant righteousness, which means you are focused on knowing Jesus and being right with him, the only way we can have righteousness is through Christ. It's because of the cross, that's it. I don't do my own righteousness. Only Jesus brings that. But if I sow to that, my walk with Christ, knowing him, being close to him, being changed by him, being transformed by him, if I sow to that, I will reap steadfast love. But if I sow to iniquity, I'm going to reap corruption. If I sow to my own abilities and power, and trusting in my own warriors, my own strength, then I'm going to reap something entirely different. You reap what you sow. Whatever we plant in our garden, that is what's going to come up. Whatever I put into my life, that is what's going to come out. All right, one more verse. 1 Timothy chapter 4, page 852 in our Bibles. Chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. Have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. The word train yourself there in this translation comes from the same word that we get our word gymnasium from. It is this physical rigorous training. And he says, listen, in the same way you work out your body, football players, work out your spirit. It takes work. I don't know of any athlete who sits around all day and does nothing and then feels like he can go out and play a ball game and do well at it. It takes rigorous training to make that happen. He says, in the same way, dedicate yourself to this. Verse 8, for while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. Here's the bottom line. This is what this series is about. The fact that there are some things that I need in my life if I'm going to be in the path to knowing Christ, to being close to Him. For some of you who have spent your lives in church, you've heard all these messages before in some way, shape, or form. Great. These are not, you know, for many of you, messages where you're going to go, oh, that's a new truth. I learned something today I've never heard before. And for some of you, it is more a time for you to step back and say, I'm going to be real honest. I need to take a good look at the garden that is my life and ask myself, am I partnering with God to put the right stuff in my life so that what comes up later will be what He wants and what I need? Some of you, this may be the first time you've heard some of these challenges. And I want to just encourage you to start looking at your life and understand that the greatest priority that you can have is knowing Christ. Now, hear me. I hate discipline. I'm not a good person at plans, at programs, at discipline, at setting aside time. But I want to encourage you to start working through these things, and I'm going to do the same thing during this series to make sure I'm investing in my life what needs to be there. Because I know that I have major shortcomings in a lot of things that I'm going to talk about. And so, as we kind of launch this series, Gardening for Dummies, I want to just kind of for a few minutes talk to you about just two key ideas that we need to remember about, you know, the garden that is our life. Two ideas that I always need to hold these. And here's the deal. They're kind of like grabbing hold of two sides, two places of tension, and not letting go. And all the way through this, I'm going to come back to these two things. I wanted to start this morning our series on gardening with kind of an overview, kind of a chapter one. By the way, all the messages are going to kind of be like chapters in a Gardening for Dummies book, okay? So chapter one, introduction. Our introduction is this. There's two things I need to hold on to if I'm going to start integrating these disciplines in my life. Every discipline I come to, I need to remember these two issues and not let go of these two things, or I'm going to end up struggling with it in a major way. We're going to talk about four specific disciplines. Specifically, we're going to talk about the Bible, the discipline of prayer, the discipline of witness, and the discipline of community, or living faith together with a group of people. In these, there's going to be a lot of other different types of disciplines that we talk about. This is not an all-inclusive list, and I will encourage you, on the table out in the foyer, in the information table, I have given a short reading list with some great books on the spiritual disciplines that if you've never read anything on growing in the disciplined area of the Christian life, of partnering with God in my growth, pick up one of those and choose one of those books and buy it. If you have more questions about it, I'd be more than happy to talk to you because there's some great resources. I would encourage you to read a book on the spiritual disciplines. But two things in my garden that I need to hold on to, and the first is this. The first thing I can't let go of is that every garden has some key elements. Every garden has some key elements. I don't care what type of garden it is. There are some things that has to be there for the garden to work and the garden to grow. Things like sunlight. If you don't have sunlight, if you don't have some form of bright light, garden's not going to grow. We have tried this with grass countless times. In my old house, we lived in a place, we had this giant pine tree. I mean, it was huge. It was like 50 feet tall, filled most of our backyard. And we, every spring and fall, we planted grass seed. I have spent thousands of dollars on grass seed that never grew. And the reason it never grew is because really the sunlight could never really get to it. And we even bought the kind that was for intense shade. Didn't work. Because it just really never got any real sunlight. And so we'd never, you know, we'd have little clumps here, little clumps there, but it, you need sunlight. You need some water, even if you're going to grow cactus. Or what is it? I almost said cactuses. It's cacti, isn't it? What's right? Cacti. Thank you, all you teachers and those who are going back to school this week. I had to get that in. That was cruel. I'm sorry. Not really. But anyway. You know, even if you're going to grow cacti, they need some water. You need to be able to till the ground. You need dirt. I mean, good grief. If you don't have dirt, I mean, try planting a seed in midair. It just doesn't work. You need something that it's in. There are some elements that have to be there for any garden. Every garden needs these. It doesn't matter what type of garden you grow. There are some elements that need to be part of any garden. And in the same way, there are some things in the life of somebody who's a follower of Jesus that really has to be there if it's going to grow. Most of us, our experience may be that, you know, we kind of had this place, we wanted to grow a garden, and now we've shown up and it's just grown up and sprouted up with all kinds of weeds. And if I want to turn my life that is kind of full of weeds into a beautiful garden of growth in my relationship with God, there are some elements that have to be there, just like a real garden needs water and soil and sunlight and those sorts of things. Some of those things we've already talked about, Bible, prayer, community, witness. There are some others that are really good, but there are some things that have to be in my life. And you need to understand that these disciplines are necessary for my growth. If I'm not doing anything for my spiritual life, I'm going to get weeds and thistles and thorns and just a garden that one day I'm going to wake up and I'm going to go, I know I knew God at one point in time. But here in the midst of my life where I'm hurting and struggling, I just don't see him anymore. Because I am reaping what I've sown. What is coming out of my life is exactly what I put into it with my walk with Christ. And they are necessary. How do we know they're necessary? Because first of all, the Bible just really tells us. I mean, some of these disciplines, some of these things I need to integrate into my life are not just silent in the Bible. They're shouted. It's just very clear where it's taught. This needs to be part of who you are. We also see all of these in the life of Jesus. Everything we're going to talk about, we'll be able to point and say, and this is how Jesus did it. You will see it in his life. We also see it in the life of all of his followers in some way, shape, or form that are pointed out in the scriptures. These disciplines are necessary. They are part of who I am. And one of the dangers I have in the looking at my life and dealing with the disciplines of the Christian life is that I look at them and say, but I would rather do this, this, and this. That's too hard. And I suffer from laziness and busyness. And I never get to the point where I start planting and investing in my life the things that are going to help me connect to Jesus. And it's a real danger because if I don't start integrating these things into my life, I'm going to get what I planted. It's just going to happen. But the other issue here is we kind of think about the fact that every garden has some key elements is that the disciplines are not the garden. Okay? Planting seeds in spring is not the garden. Pouring water is not the garden. The garden is the growth that comes as a result of God using those things and making them real. And the other danger, and this is a huge, huge danger, is that I start doing the stuff, but I think the stuff is the end. We see this in the Bible most clear in these guys called the Pharisees who encountered Jesus relentlessly. They were nuts about these disciplines. These were guys who would spend 2 hours a day in prayer, another hour a day in Bible reading. They would start teaching their children so that one of their children, by the time they were 12 years old, would have the first 5 books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, memorized. Most of us haven't even read them. And if we have, we have gone, what am I reading? This doesn't make sense. But they had these, their 12-year-old kids had these books memorized so that you could be in a dialogue with them and you could be talking to this kid who's 12 years old from the family of a Pharisee and you could ask them a Bible question, a theological question, instead of saying, well, this is what I think. They would quote chapter and verse of one of the first 5 books of the Bible intelligently. These guys were so crazy about it that they wanted everybody to know that they were really holy and religious and Bible readers. And so they kept a scroll with a certain section of scripture and they wore it on their head as a little headband. So they had this headband and went around their head with this little scroll right there. It looked like unicorns walking around. They could rip that scroll off and have some Bible verses anytime they wanted it. They kept a scroll like that on their wrist so they could put it over their heart so the word of God would be on their heart. And these guys encountered Jesus. They had the disciplines down, but when they met Jesus, they missed him. And Jesus said, man, you search the scriptures thinking that in them you have eternal life. Those very scriptures talk about me. See, they thought the disciplines were the garden. See, these disciplines are necessary, but they are nothing more than a path. I got to keep my eye on the outcome. That's Jesus. And so the first thing I just want you to understand, there's some elements in the garden that are necessary. They have to be there. We're going to point out a few in the next few weeks. But the second thing is this. That's one hand. Second hand, no two gardens are the same. And my guess is that this is where most of you have struggled. You have been told, well, you have to do this. I mean, you know, any real Christian is going to have a 45-minute time in the Bible every day. Every real Christian is going to pray this amount of time. And all of a sudden, you begin to look at all the systems that people try to tell you, this is the right way to do this. And you listen to them, and you said, okay, if that's what I'm supposed to do, I'm going to try. And all of a sudden, it was dry, and it just didn't fit, and it didn't work for you. And all of a sudden, you began to realize, wait a minute. I just am not getting out of this what I am. And the reason is because you're not wired like those people. No two gardens are the same. Some people garden, like my dad, because they want to be the king of the neighborhood with their vegetables. Some people garden because they really are interested in beauty. So they grow a lot of flowers. Some people garden because they want a place of peace and serenity. And so they may create something like a little Zen garden. Some people garden because, you know, they might grow a vineyard because they like wine. They like to do that sort of stuff. Some people garden because they just want a place where they can go and sit and read and be quiet. Some people garden because they want everybody in the neighborhood to think they have the coolest yard on the block. No two gardens are the same. And here's the thing I want to tell you. I want you to hear me. When you look at it, you say, I got to integrate these things in my life. But when you try to fit yourself into a mold that is just like everybody else, it's going to be very difficult and very hard for you. And so you need to experiment and wrestle and struggle and find ways that fit you. The example I give all the time is I read this stuff where people say, oh, you know, really godly people get up in the morning early to pray. And I don't even think God gets up before 7 o'clock. I've tried it. And if that's what it means to be really godly, I am hopeless because I cannot do that. But I do resonate with the fact that sometimes Jesus stayed up all night to pray. Because I'm a night owl. I can do that. And so as you wrestle with these, and here's just some thoughts about this. First of all, realize that they are tools, not rules. The disciplines we're talking about, they're tools, not rules. Do not create a rule that I have to, at 7 o'clock every morning, I have to read, and if I have my quiet time, my time with God, 7 o'clock every morning. Also, they flow from grace. They flow from the fact that I am accepted. I don't get accepted because I do the disciplines. I am accepted. This is the whole of Christian life. If I start doing anything to try to get God's favor, I'm going to fail. But if I understand as a follower of Jesus, I already am accepted and loved more than I can know. And let the disciplines, my time with God, flow from that. And so as I deal with these disciplines, they're tools, not rules. They flow from grace. Third, avoid the comparison game. This is huge, okay? It would be very easy for me to sit back and start thinking about some of the greats. Like I look at Martin Luther and I see the fact that here's a guy who spent, you know, hours upon hours upon hours studying the scriptures. I look at a guy like Calvin, John Calvin, who wrote thousands of pages of theology. And then I look at it's somebody like Mother Teresa who gave her life. And if I start trying to be all those people and I start trying to compare myself to this person or that person and I try to be everything they are, I'm going to kill myself because they weren't everything that each other was. They lived their relationship with their Creator. And understand this, God deals with us based on who we are, how he has wired us, and we're different. Just like I deal with my kids in different ways. We are finding very fast that the way that I dealt with Andy growing up and the way that I dealt with Alex growing up does not work with Josiah. We're finding that really fast. He is just wired so completely differently. And so just figuring out, I live my relationship with Josiah. I can't expect him to be just like the other kids. And when I do, I find that it's very hard for me. You need to understand, you are not wired like all these other people that you tend to look up to and tend to idolize. Don't try to compare yourself to them. Be who God has made you. Integrate these things in your life, but be who God has made you and make it work for you. So for me, one of the things I love to do, I really like to write. I've written probably 1,000, 1,500 quiet times. Some of them I've published in little books for kids, teenagers over the years. Most of them are just on my computer taking up space. But for me, that time of reading the Bible and sitting down and writing something that is for me and for whoever else who reads it is a way that I interact with God. Some of you, if I threw that out as something that you ought to do, would go, forget it, I'm out of here. I hate sitting down on a computer, much less writing. And so be you. They're tools, not rules. Be yourself. Wrestle with this. Understand that don't compare yourself to other people. And just kind of one last thing. Start somewhere. Start somewhere. As you hear these things, I'm going to be challenging you to integrate some things in life. Don't try to start with 8 hours every day. You might start with each of these something simple to begin with and let it grow from there. But start planting seeds. Start sowing into your life these things. And sometimes even when it's hard, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. And what happens is that when I do that, I do believe that God will come and begin to interact with me. I will meet him. I will know him. And then when those pressure times come where I need the presence of God, I'll experience him in my life because I have sown those things in my life and he's making it grow. That's where this series is going. Your life is a garden. You partner with God as the gardener. You are going to sow into your life the things that you choose, but you reap what you sow. God will make it grow, but you need to do some things to make these things happen. And so I just want to challenge you to start thinking through this, be challenged by this, look to what God wants you to do. This is all possible because of Jesus. Do not hear this, that you now have to create a set of laws and rules for yourself so that somehow you get God's favor. Jesus came, he died, he lived a perfect life, and then he died the death that I should have died for me. I am accepted because of his grace, because of his unmerited good favor. There's nothing I can do to earn it. No amount of Bible study, no amount of prayer, no amount of anything is going to earn God's favor. He gives it as a free gift. And as somebody who's trusted Jesus, I just received that. That's a great thing. And because of that, we celebrate communion as a reminder of the great price Jesus paid for me and for you. Communion is a great place for us to come to in the first morning about spiritual disciplines. Because every time I do the discipline, whether it's Bible study or reading or prayer or memorization or community or whatever it is, I need to remember that the end result is knowing Christ. It's not the discipline. And today we remember that by taking communion. Jesus, when he was with his disciples on the last night of his life, took the bread, he broke it, said, "This is my body, it's given for you." He took the cup, he said, "This is the cup of the new covenant of my blood that is going to be poured out for you." He said, "Every time you do this, remember me." And that's what we're going to do this morning. We're going to remember Jesus, because he is the goal of my life and of my faith and even of every discipline I do. And he's, even as I head towards that and start thinking about how do I do these in my life, never forget, it's about Jesus and knowing him. I'm going to pray. The band's going to be out here. After I pray, they're going to do a song. And while they're doing a song, we're going to have people serving you. We want to invite you to come down the middle aisle, participate in communion. We have our offering baskets here. Offering is a part of worship for us, because we realize that as I give, I am giving back to God because he has given so much to us. And so if you're a part of Genesis, the offering is here for you. If you're a guest, we don't want you to give. This is our gift to you, this service is, and we don't expect you to put anything in the offering plate. But anybody who is a follower of Christ, who has a relationship with him, and who is connected to him, is welcome to participate in communion this morning. I'm going to pray. We can stand. We can worship. We can participate in communion. Jesus, I love you. I thank you for knowing me and allowing me to know you. And I just pray that our life is a garden, that you will help us to begin to sow the right things in our life so that we will see beautiful flowers and beautiful plants and beautiful things. And Lord, help each of us realize that we relate to you in the way you've designed us and created us. We shouldn't compare ourselves to everybody else, but we should pursue you. Thank you for speaking into my life this morning, that very truth. In your name I pray. Amen.